What is going on with the Trump stock? Tesla updates their self-driving software, a review of the latest jobs report, Playboy being used in academia, and more. Welcome back to the Weekly Money Clip. In a market with millions of podcasts, it is tough to stay on top of the essential biz and tech stories beyond headlines. This week, we will be counting down five key moments from last week to give you context for the week ahead. As always, clips are under 5 minutes from voices you trust, adding context to headlines from the week behind to prepare you for the week ahead. Before we jump in, let's review the top headlines. This week in the worlds of business, technology, and markets, one of the most significant stories was Arm Holdings' staggering 48% surge in share value, driven by the artificial intelligence spending boom. This reflects not only the growing importance of AI in various sectors, but also the potential for further innovation and expansion in the tech space. AI is being seen as a transformative force with applications ranging from smartphones to automobiles and smart home devices, indicating a massive shift in how technology is integrated into our daily lives. In another major story, IBM announced a $500 million enterprise AI venture fund aimed at investing in the future leaders of AI, highlighting the increasing investment and confidence in AI technologies to revolutionize industries and business processes. Sony's release of the Alpha 9 III, the world's first full-frame camera with a global shutter system, was also a noteworthy technology story, showcasing the continual push for innovation in the consumer electronics sector. Global economic concerns such as inflation and banking stability continue to headline financial news, indicating a period of significant change and potential volatility in the markets. Those were the key headlines. Now, let's dive into the stories behind the headlines. This week, we welcome Josh Hammer, Kenny Polcari, Simpson Garfinkel, and Mitch Rochelle.
At number 5 in our countdown, we begin with Josh Hammer. He is the Newsweek opinion editor, host of The Josh Hammer Show, syndicated columnist, and Edmund Burke Foundation research fellow. Here, he discusses the uncertain future of former President Trump's social media platform, Truth Social. Following Elon Musk's takeover of Twitter, the demand for alternative free speech platforms decreased significantly. The business fundamentals of Truth Social, including user base and revenue streams, don't inspire confidence. With Twitter now allowing previously banned individuals back on the platform, Trump's market following has dwindled. Hammer questions whether Trump should consider selling his shares in the next 6 months, given the platform's shaky prospects. Ultimately, Hammer predicts continued volatility for Truth Social's stock as the platform struggles to find its footing in the changing social media landscape. Here is the entire segment.
Unfortunately for former President Trump, I only anticipate that Truth Social stock price is going to continue to be volatile. And there is a very simple and obvious explanation for this, which is that the market for alternative so-called pro-free speech social media platforms really crashed and totally ended in large part after Elon Musk took over Twitter. So if you go back during 2020, 2021, the so-called free speech app at that time was Parler. Then you had the rise of Getter, which still exists, although it has lost a lot of its users, is my understanding. And then you had Truth Social. Well, what did all of Parler, Getter, and Truth Social have in common? Well, they were all apps that are predicated upon fast tweets, or they're not literally tweets, but they're posts that function and look like tweets. So quick posting, essentially in real time. And they were trying to provide an alternative to Twitter back when Twitter was ruled by Jack Dorsey and the Jack Dorsey regime, the ancien regime, you might say, to kind of borrow from French Revolution and that. And Elon Musk turned all of that on its head. He took over and he largely made Twitter, I guess we're calling it X these days, a free speech platform. And that had the obvious effect of just totally dulling the market for alternatives. So when you start getting into the nuts and bolts as to what kind of user base Truth Social has, what kind of cash reserves they have, what kind of revenues and profits and all that, it's not necessarily going to look amazing. This is a platform that ultimately revolves around one person, Donald J. Trump, and the market for that is just seriously diminished after Twitter, again, has allowed so many people back onto his platform who were previously banned from using it. Folks like Laura Loomer, Alex Jones, James O'Keefe, people like that, all of whom were banned from the pre-Elon Musk regime at Twitter, but are now let back on the platform. So, you know, unfortunately for Donald Trump's perspective, I just don't see the situation with Truth Social necessarily stabilizing or getting any better. That all raises the more interesting question as to whether he should try to find a way to sell his shares that are currently subject to a lockup agreement at some point over the next 6 months or so, whether or not he can get board or shareholder approval to do that. All of that is an interesting conversation, but is somewhat extraneous to the current topic. So for present purposes, suffice to say, I do expect Truth Social to continue to be most volatile.
We now continue the countdown with number four. We join Kenny Polcari. He is the founder of Case Capital Advisors. This clip is a snapshot from Kenny's commentary this week. He addressed stocks and bonds facing pressure amid uncertain economic data. Also, Federal Reserve chiefs discussed the possibility of 3 rate cuts, causing confusion as the strong economic data might not support this move. Yields for 10-year and 2-year bonds reached 4-month highs. Oil prices are rising due to demand and tensions in the Middle East, while gold hit $2,300 but could not sustain the level. The market's lack of confidence led to a fall. Powell's reassurance that there is no rush to cut rates was interpreted differently by investors, creating further confusion. Despite this uncertainty, it is advised to stay cautious and informed. Let's join Kenny now.
Good morning. Today is Wednesday, April 3rd, and I am Kenny Polcari for CenterClip. And so here's a quick update and some thoughts on what happened to the market yesterday and where I think potentially we're headed, right? So we can dive right in. Stocks and bonds, as you know, came under pressure yesterday as investors are navigating the sea of economic data, which, you know, is not at the moment very uncertain. It appears to be very strong, the economic data, and that's causing confusion in the markets because we had 2 Fed heads come out yesterday talking about, you know, we can all expect 3 rate cuts, and they keep talking as if, you know, the Fed is prepared to cut rates, yet the economic data is not supporting a rate cut. The economy remains strong. The market had remained strong. We're kissing all-time highs. And so there's some confusion, right? What is the answer? Are we cutting rates or not cutting rates? I think partly the market is so focused on these rate cuts that it can't seem to get out of its own way. In any event, the conflicting message has left a lot of investors scratching their heads, unsure of which direction, which way to go. And so therefore, when there's uncertainty in the market, what do we see happen? We see stocks sell off, bonds sold off. 10-year and 2-year yields now are at 4-month highs. At 10 years yielding 4.36, the 2 years yielding 4.71%. So as I said yesterday, 5% is going to be that number. 4.75% 5% is going to be the number that really will present some headwinds for the market. But until then, I think the market's just backing off as it remains confused. And like I said, the market doesn't like uncertainty. Today, we've got, you know, 4 more Fed heads talking. We got Rafi Bostic was this morning. We've got Jay Powell at 12:30. We've got 2 Fed governors, Mishy Bowman and Adriana Kugler, but that are also going to give their opinion on where we think rates are going, what the market is doing, what investors can expect. In my mind, I think they spend way too much trying to pinpoint when we're going to get a rate cut, right? Listen, we all know, let's check the box. We all know that the next move in rates is most likely down, although it's not a guarantee. That is most likely down. So we can all agree on that. The question is timing. And my argument is you can't really time it because the economic data that the Fed is so dependent on is not suggesting a rate cut at the moment. So the idea that they continue to tell us that we can expect 3 rate cuts and multiple rate cuts in 2024 is illogical to me because the data doesn't confirm it. One way or the other, we saw oil prices continue to rise. We know what that's all about, kind of the oil demand, the production cuts in OPEC, as well as the tension, the ongoing tension in the Middle East. Gold pierced $2,300 yesterday, a number that I thought yesterday's note, I told you it felt like it wanted to test, but it felt like it was going to get run into resistance. It was get tired once it got there. So it tested it yesterday. It closed below. It tested it overnight this morning, 2308, and then it backed off at 2295. So we can see how gold continues to move its way up. And there's a lot of reasons that gold is moving up at the moment. A lot of it is just based around, again, the uncertainty, right? And gold is very certain in terms of people feel safety in gold. Looking ahead, futures this morning were indicating that the market's a little bit lower. The market is now open. It's kind of waffling around as it continues to look for direction. It's going to pay attention, all kinds of attention, to the Fed heads today, what they say, what the market hears versus what these Fed heads say, because that's another issue. Jay Powell has been very clear. He's been talking about holding rates higher for longer, no rush to cut. The economy's not going into recession, but yet the market and investors don't hear that same message, which is what causes the confusion. In any event, it does present kind of a challenging landscape here over the short term. It's not a reason to get out of the market. As a long-term investor, you should ride the wave and take advantage of the chaos by putting new money to work in sectors that go on sale, right? I would just advise you to remain cautious, but stay informed as we navigate through these uncertain times. And you can always reach out. I'm happy to talk to you about long-term wealth planning. Give me a buzz. Always happy to talk. Until tomorrow, take good care.
The world's best-known investor and Wall Street expert, Warren Buffett, once said, "Wall Street is the only place that people ride to in a Rolls-Royce to get advice from those who take the subway." Mr. Buffett's quote is remarkably accurate, but how many people would rather receive advice from him than someone simply guessing? Welcome to Buy, Hold, Sell, your single source for Wall Street knowledge and profitable guidance. Please join me, Todd Schoenberger, and fellow trader Tobin Smith, as well as host Veronica Dudo, for a podcast known to move the needle for investors. Tobin and I are seasoned Wall Street executives with deep investment experience, and we are prepared to share our advice to those who choose to listen. Download Buy, Hold, Sell today on the Evergreen Podcast Network or your favorite podcast channel.
Welcome back to number 3 in our weekly countdown with Simpson Garfinkel. He is a science journalist who has published hundreds of articles in newspapers and magazines and 17 books. Research interests broadly include data science ethics, digital forensics, personal information management, counterintelligence, and counterterrorism. He is currently chief scientist, Basis Tech LLC. In this piece, he comments on Tesla and recent news regarding their self-driving program. Garfinkel urges listeners to stay grounded amidst tech mania. Trust in innovators like Elon Musk. Simpson shares that recently in his Tesla, he encountered the upgrade to a newer version of the full self-driving mode. This upgrade shifted from 300,000 lines of C++ code to neural network technology trained on millions of driver videos. The idea is to let go of control and let the Tesla Model Y take the lead. But questions linger. How was the previous code tested? Can we confirm its efficiency? The system has shown glitches, like running red lights in the rain. The shift from custom code to video-trained AI raises eyebrows. Can we trust AI more than humans? What else did Simpson have to say on this tech update? Here is the audio op-ed now.
Hi, this is Simpson Garfinkel for CenterClip, talking about technology, telling you not to fear the Reaper and to put your trust in Elon Musk. Let me explain. I sometimes drive a Tesla, and when I got into the Tesla this morning, I was told that the self-driving software, the full self-driving mode, had been upgraded to version 12.3.3, and that this new version, instead of consisting of 300,000 lines of handwritten C++ code, was instead trained on millions of video clips of people driving and used advanced neural network technology. And this was supposed to make me feel safer about putting my hands into the good driving skills of the Tesla Model Y and allowing it to take control and do all the driving. And I'm thinking, what? The old full self-driving mode was running on 300,000 lines of handwritten C++ code, and they never told anybody? And like, this was supposed to be a good thing, the state of the art? Like, what were they doing? How was that code tested? Do we even know? Do we even care? Like, why are they even telling me details like this? Why are they advertising that their new system is so wonderful because it was trained on millions of driver's clips? I mean, how many of those clips have ambulances pulled over to the side of the road, which we know that the full self-driving mode has crashed into on occasion? And how many of those have cars crossing illegally? Like, I don't know, right? I'm not saying anything good or bad about the full self-driving mode. I did try it out today. It did try to drive through a red light. I did have to put my foot on the stop pedal. But to be fair, it's raining right now. And it did say that the full self-driving mode may be impaired because it's raining. And I guess that's sort of like getting into a taxi where the driver of the taxi says, I might be a little impaired because I've been drinking, but that's okay because at least it's not raining. Anyway, should you trust the full self-driving mode, or is it safer on average than human beings really are? I honestly don't know. I tried it out. I've tried it out a few times. It's a little creepy, but what really gets me is this idea that the code was previously based on 300,000 lines of handwritten C++ code, and that now they feel so bad about that, that they're telling me that it's now trained on millions of video clips. So this is Simpson Garfinkel for Talking About Technology for CenterClip.
Welcome back. At number two this week, we have Mitch Rochelle with an analysis on the most recent jobs report. Mitch is a media commentator, macro strategist, podcaster, and public speaker on the economy, real estate, and policy. He can be seen regularly on Fox News, Fox Business, and News Nation. In this piece, Mitch balances the overall good news with some complexity behind the promising headline numbers. What do these numbers say about what the Fed sees coming? Let's join Mitch now.
Mitch Rochelle here with a Money Clip on Jobs Friday, looking at the March jobs report. Better than expected, 303,000 jobs created. The unemployment rate fell to 3.8%. Really good news. The jobs market remains strong. And in fact, wages, real wages, meaning wages adjusted for inflation, are still positive. We're seeing wage gains slow down a bit. They were year over year running around 5% plus. Now they're 4.1%. But that's still a good percentage point higher than the annual rate of inflation. All good news. A few things sort of behind the numbers that I wanted to dig into. Healthcare led the way, creating 72,000 plus jobs in the month of May, Government, and I paused there, created 71,000 jobs. And we're seeing a trend where about 25% of the jobs being created coming from government. So there's a little bit of an embedded subsidy there where government is fueling job growth, but government isn't the only driver. Again, good news. Leisure and hospitality grew by almost 50,000 jobs. And now the level of leisure and hospitality jobs in this economy is roughly where it was before COVID. So that industry has certainly bounced back. All good news. A couple of things, though, behind the numbers. Even the Fed is signaling this. We're seeing that the immigration situation is a contributing factor to jobs gains. So some of the folks that are coming across the border are fueling, in terms of supply of jobs, some of the jobs that are out there. However, a sign of a healthy economy is one that has demand for jobs. And the Labor Department earlier this week said that there are 8.8 million job openings. Again, this is a package of really good news. Now, before I give a total pat on the back to the Fed for doing its job to fulfill its mandate to strive for full employment, I do want to look at one thing that's buried in these numbers, which is professional and business services only created 7,000 jobs. Now, business and professional services had been a major driver of job growth throughout much of this jobs recovery. And now it looks like they're scaling back. It's not a negative number, which would be worrisome, like the utility sector that actually generated negative job growth. But it is a little worrisome because these are the jobs, these are the white collar jobs, professional services firms, accountants, lawyers, engineers, other business services like technology spend within companies. It seems as though those sectors are dialing back. This is business to business consumption generally. And when business to business consumption starts to slow down, you have to ask yourself, what do CEOs of companies know that we don't know if they're starting to dial back some of this discretionary corporate spend? Is it that they see trouble down the road, or are they trying to sort of manufacture corporate profits by cutting back expenses? Two things are bad there. One is if they see trouble down the road, that's a signal that we may need to concern ourselves with. The other thing is if they're manufacturing profits by cutting back spend, cutting back on overhead, that means that the stock market, which is anticipating earnings growth, may not get the earnings growth that they desire. So overall, I think a very strong jobs report. And I think you're going to see the Biden administration take a victory lap. However, in any report, there's always a few nuggets that have me concerned. And the one in this report is professional and business job growth. Mitch Rochelle with your Money Clip on Job Friday on CineClip.
Ready to up your game and learn more about the thrilling world of sports betting? Introducing Double Down with Breslow, the ultimate podcast about the business of sports gambling. Join me, James Breslow, and a long list of expert guests as we dive into the art and science of the sports betting industry, evolving regulations, technology enhancements, and the meteoric rise in the number of players makes this sector the fastest growing and most intriguing in the world. Unlock the business secrets from many of the industry's most recognizable C-suite executives, including famous odds makers and influencers. Every episode of Double Down with Breslow is packed with insider tips, deeply skilled analysis, and in-depth discussions. Don't miss out on the ultimate resource for mastering the business of sports betting. Listen to Double Down with Breslow on the Evergreen Podcast Network or wherever you listen to podcasts. That's Double Down with Breslow, the business of sports betting podcast.
To round out our countdown this week, we again join Simpson Garfinkel on a story that involves Playboy and technology. In 1983, at the Architectural Machine Group, later known as the MIT Media Lab, had two women, Pam and Lena, images of women's faces used for computer graphics demonstrations. They were later revealed to be derived from Playboy centerfolds. IEEE recently banned Lena's use in publications due to appropriateness concerns. At an AAIA conference, Simpson tells the story of an objection to revealing computer-generated images of women that was dismissed by a graduate student citing having received faculty approval. The issue reflects a long-standing struggle in computer graphics with inappropriate portrayal of women, causing harm and exclusion. Recognizing the need for change, IEEE's ban on Lena signifies progress towards more respectful content in academic computing. This is the entire segment from Simpson.
When I was a freshman, I took a course in computer graphics at MIT, and at the lab, the test image for a lot of the demonstrations of algorithms was an image of a woman's face, and she was called Pam. And there was another woman's face that we also used for test images, and her name was Lena. And I had been working in the lab for about a year when I found out that Pam and Lena were actually Playboy centerfolds, and some of the older students in the lab actually had scans of the entire Playboy centerfold that they would put on the monitors from time to time. So this was in 1983. This was at the Architectural Machine Group, which was the precursor to the MIT Media Lab. And this is news today because the IEEE, the Institute for Electrical and Electronic Engineers, which is one of the major computer science publishers in the world, has banned the use of the test image Lena in all IEEE publications. And this is a really big deal. So back in 1996, there was an article that was published in another IEEE publication called A Note on Lena, which said, you know, like maybe we shouldn't be using a Playboy centerfold for our test images. And it really wasn't taken that well at the time. People thought that this was an example of political correctness, even though using test images from Playboy centerfolds, even test images that don't show the nudity, were viewed by many people as problematic. Now, for me personally, I was at a AAAI, the Association for the Advancement of Artificial Intelligence, a few years ago, and several of the images that I saw on the screen were photographs of computer models of a woman where her dress was up above her pelvic area, and it was quite revealing, and it was also computer generated. And I raised as an issue at the time to the graduate student who was from China that this was not an appropriate image to be showing at a professional conference. And he responded that his advisor, a professor at a California computer science department, had looked at the slides and had seen no problems with them. And in any event, he was doing a literature review and that image had appeared in several other documents, several other publications as well. So computing has long had a problem. Computer graphics has long had a problem with the inappropriate display of women. It causes harm, real harm, in people who experience these images because it makes them feel that they don't, some people makes them feel that they don't belong, or it makes them feel that we don't value the contributions of women and see them primarily as objects to look at rather than colleagues to interact with. So I'm pleased that IEEE has banned the use of Lena. I hope that other equally disturbing uses of female and male sexualized imagery has no role in academic computing. And this is a good step. So this is Simpson Garfinkel for CenterClick.
That's it for this week. Please remember this episode presents the personal opinions of these individuals and should not be viewed as investment advice. Thank you to Josh Hammer, Kenny Polcari, Simpson Garfinkel, and Mitch Rochelle. For their work and more in real time, please visit centerclip.com. This show has been produced in collaboration with CrossCheck Media Management. CrossCheck redefines family office services with a distinctive blend of financial expertise, media innovation, and alternative investments. One topic at a time, leaders on both sides, always under 5 minutes. That is elevating discourse. Again, centerclip.com for more throughout the week. We'll be back next week. This has been the Weekly Money Clip.
The Jim Stroud Podcast explores the discoveries and trends forming the future of our lives. Brain-to-brain communication, robot bosses, microchip implants for workers, and artificial intelligence replacing human workers are all happening now. If you want to know what's happening next, subscribe now to the Jim Stroud Podcast.